the job for the Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk with a face that's mean. Lots of muscle and skin that's green. Superhero Hulk.
Good job, handsome.
The Incredible Hulk and Spider-Man from the Superhero Collection. Each sold separately by Mego.
Everybody, and welcome to Pod Stallions, the official podcast of Plaid Stallions. Sorry for the long delay in getting an episode done. We will explain later. With me, as always, is my partner and co-host, Jason Lindsay.
Hi, everybody.
And we also have a special guest this episode in the form of author, cartoonist, actually best-selling author, cartoonist,
right.
Comic store entrepreneur, YouTube sensation, hat enjoyer, Art Balthazar.
It's me. Hey, man.
Welcome aboard, Art.
Oh, yeah, man.
And
Art, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. I'm a big fan.
This is perfect timing because Art and I and a number of other people are putting on the annual Mego convention next weekend in beautiful Skokie, Illinois.
That's right.
And it is called Aw Yeah Mego Meet. And that is a merger of Art's brand, Aw Yeah Comics, and the Mego Meat brand, which is
Mego
Museums. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we thought this would be a real fun trip down Mego Lane. This is by no means our last kick at Mego. We'll just call this Mego Part 1 because for those that don't know me, I used to actually host a podcast that was – or co-host a podcast that was all Mego. And Jason was a regular guest. Were you ever on it, Art?
I was.
That's
I
right.
might have been on there once or, I don't know if twice, but I know once.
I interviewed you for it. I remember that.
Yeah.
Now. Yeah. Yeah.
See, was I was on it too?
You were like Buck Henry.
Was I?
Yeah, you were on all the time.
Wait, what did we talk about, though?
The Mego Museum. Well, you were at the time, Biff Bang Pow was producing an ocean of 8-inch figures.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, yes, so I remember now. So it was more talking to me about the possibilities for... Yes, I remember. I remember. Yes. I was the Buck Henry of the
yeah.
Museum podcast.
I think you were the number one co-chair guest. Like you
I think so. I was in line to get the hosting gig, but the show, you know, is no longer... If one of you dropped out, but, you know, I was going to be the David Brenner of the Mego Museum podcast, but, you know, the show just kind of went away, so...
Well, instead
there
of...
There goes my dream.
Well, you know what? I loved doing it, but I hated being limited by the format, and that's why you and I started Pod Stallions, because we could just talk about anything.
Oh, yeah! See, it's all coming together now.
And now it's kind of ironic we're circling back to Mego. But
it all comes back home,
with the guest.
Yeah, exactly. But it's but it's it, you know, I mean, it is my first toy love, and I think you're kind of equal to that, Art, right?
Like, yeah, I've yeah. been. Those are my first, yeah, the first toys ever.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, like I'm just of that age where I think Big Jim and G.I. Joe were over by the time I was 5.
Yeah.
So it was Mego from 75 to about 78 when Star Wars started hitting.
Yeah, my cousins had those bigger guys. G.I. Joe and even those other guys, Warpath guys.
Oh, like
Big Jim?
Big Jim is
Warpath,
and then Johnny West was out at the time, too.
Yeah, those were a little bit too... Like I was too little.
Yeah.
It was maybe 3 or 4 when those guys were out.
I can honestly remember going to a kid's house, and he had just gotten Amigo, Batman, and Superman.
Yeah.
And they still had the gloves, and he's like, and I got another guy we can use. And, you know, I wanted to play with these... I hadn't seen a perfect Batman in a long time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then he hands me his brother's old Johnny West. I was like, you can be Johnny. And he might as well have just handed me a sock.
It's like, I'm going home now. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we would give Jamie West to my dad when we play. Yeah. It was Johnny West's son, Jamie. He was,
yeah, I remember
still,
him.
He had a little kid face, but he was still taller than every Migo.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the beauty of Johnny was he was indestructible.
Yeah,
I gotta say that you know, I always talk about this, our childhoods, when I talk about Star Wars and stuff, that there was a world before Star Wars and Kenner and stuff like that. And you know, I think, you know, the more I sort of recall, there was vaguely a world before Mego, but it was only like I have vague sort of hazy recollections of, you know, the 12-inch G.I. Joes, probably from a cousin or something, or, you know, my brothers are older than me. They're like 10 years older, so they wouldn't have had those G.I. Joes necessarily sitting around. You know, there were Hot Wheel cars and things like that, and maybe the Fisher-Price type, you know, people. But, I mean, Ground Zero really was Mego for me. I mean, that was – I mean, I had – you know, if I had the Star Trek stuff, and you know, the first three characters, you know, and the Enterprise and the Planet of the Apes stuff, we're looking at 74, 75 for this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, probably. So
I was
74. Right in, Trek is 75.
Yeah, so I was right in that pocket because I remember them on, you know, being excited about finding them and seeing them for the first time, and then discovering that there was a phaser thing, and then the communicator. So it was all right there, and that was really right before Star Wars hit. So those things, I must have gotten all those things, you know, right then. And that was those were my action figures. I mean, those were just the universal ones, you know, that kind of went with everything, and then the superhero ones, etc. So
did you ever get bummed when you would see a toy line and they weren't Mego sized? Like, I distinctly remember going, oh, at something. And I can't remember what it was because, you know, Mego created that 8-inch figure format. And because they just lucked out with the three hottest licenses the early 70s could provide, like superheroes. And then the next year they had Apes. And then the next year they had Star Trek, that everybody had to just copy them. Mm-hmm. And so if somebody didn't, like if somebody, and I'm just trying, I'm struggling now to figure out what I'm trying to remember.
Yeah.
But it was, for me, honestly, it was more like, it just didn't occur to me. Like the thing that, it was actually almost the opposite. When I got into Migos, and since I've been a kid, I love, and to this day, when it comes to like the thing we talked about, which got deleted, unfortunately, but the thing we were talking about with current stuff that's hit that we wish we had back in the day, and one of them is the new Danger Mouse animated series,
right?
And there's the Mark IV car vehicle by Jazzwares. This is like $15. You can get it through Amazon. The car, the wings pop out, the, you know, the boot opens up, whatever, and it comes with a little figure of Danger Mouse to go behind the wheel. To this day, I love the notion of a certain size, you know, character or figure that goes with a vehicle or a place that, et cetera. So it's actually the opposite. If I'd see anything in larger scale than Mego, it kind of turned me off because I knew that there weren't going to be, you know, cars and things to kind of go with it.
Yeah. So
if anything, it kind of turned me off. That seemed like more of a ripoff that this, and these, I always looked at the Mego stuff as kind of interchangeable too. Like just because,
yeah, you know, it was a universe.
Yeah, this character didn't belong with this show. Doesn't mean they use him as a gorilla, you know, that showed up on the Enterprise or whatever. And that's,
I used to use Starsky was my Bruce Banner, David Banner, because he looked more like David Banner, you know. So he was always my guy with the torn up pants. So you never had clothes on.
I
that's funny.
My Davy Crockett was a I put an old Batman suit on him, and I used a green marker. He was the Green Lantern, because Challenge of the Super Friends,
yeah.
I didn't have everybody. The Scarecrow was just a paper doll I made and put clothes on. I think I put the Falcon in General Urko's top and made him Black Vulcan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
And I'm just trying to think. Oh, and Sinestro was just Action Jackson with purple on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember constantly having to update the purple marker because it would just come off. But I built a cardboard Legion of Doom, And I would walk it down the street to my friend's house every Saturday morning because he had better Migos than me. But like, he had Joker and Penguin and a couple other. Like, he was more DC and I had more Marvel. Mm-hmm. And that just didn't fly. So we would play Challenge of the Super Friends all Saturday morning.
Yeah, my cousin had all of the. He had all the Migos that you wish you had. Like, all the ones that was like, oh, I remember that guy existed. Like, yeah. He had Kojak. Like, Kojak with the lollipop and the whole playset. Yeah,
who made that again? It's.
I don't know.
One of those things that I lust after.
XL.
I didn't even like Kojak, but that is such an insane. That figure was out, and there was like a playset to like a police station to go with it. I've got to own that sometime before I die because it's just crazy that somebody made it. But yeah,
he had a bad guy too. There was one bad guy they made.
Yeah, he came with the playset.
Yeah, it looked like Butch Cavendish.
Yeah, he kind of looked like a Foot Locker employee.
Yeah.
Like Knuckles or something. One of those crappy names. But I'll go even further. I took my – speaking of, you know, utilizing other figures as characters, was it Gabriel or Galoob that made the emergency figures?
LJN.
Yeah, LJN. And I had the emergency – which were those 8-inch scale, right?
Yeah, actually, I think they were kind of nicer than the average Mego body.
They were cool because they had like, I mean, it didn't look anything like the characters from the show, but they had like their jackets had zips on them.
Yeah,
and you know they had, you know, cool looking boots and stuff. I used them as just various, like, everyman. Like, if I needed one guy to be Peter Parker one day, or you know, James Bond, or an astronaut for the Planet of the Apes stuff, then those were the kind of the substitutes. Because I don't think I ever had the Apes TV series characters. But maybe we should go back, like we do in the show when we talk about whatever we're talking about, is go back to maybe the first kind of thing you can remember. Like, Ryan, you were mentioning going over to someone's house and they had Batman and Superman or something. Like, was that your first exposure to what...
Oh, actually, I can't tell you... because it's too rooted in childhood. Like, I don't remember my first Mego. Because, you know, I think Migos came out in, like, 73 in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, 2.
Right.
So,
wow.
The only thing I can tell you is it must have been very, very early. And this is an embarrassing story, but I lost Batman's cape under the couch. And I was probably 2.5, and I said to my mom, I need you to lift up the couch because Batman's flops under there. And she's like, his what? His flop. I didn't know what a cape was. I think I was using the word flop. My parents will still, like, joke about, you know, well, Superman and his flop today. That's 40-some-odd years later. So it's a really early rooted memory. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably my first Mego would have had to have been Action Jackson because my dad bought them on closeout. From the Mego Canada distributor, they way over ordered. And I later discovered why, because I spoke to the son of the Morris Kotzer, the original owner of Parkdale Novelty, and it was Mego launched Action Jackson in a special. They always had these Toy Fair extravaganzas, and that year was Action Jackson was launched by Milton Berle.
Oh yeah, I did hear about that.
And what he told me, what Lauren told me, was his dad loved Milton Berle, had a bit too much to drink at the party, and over-ordered Action Jackson.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And they were doing all kinds of cool things.
What the hell does Milton Berle got to do with... What the hell?
Uncle Milty, yeah.
Mego got Darren McGavern to dress up as Captain Eagle and do the Eagle Force launch.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You know, and I think for the Dominoes, the launch of the Dominoes, they got Kathy Lee Crosby from That's Incredible. Which sort of makes sense.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Do you remember before Migos, like you, my first Migo was probably removable Batman cowl, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And Robin, and I thought Robin looked weird because his legs had rivets in them. You know, his knees look weird.
Yeah, I do remember that.
You remember before Migos, there were these little Batman and Robin guys and Superman. They were like PVCs.
Oh, the Chemtoy figures.
Are they like from Hong Kong, right?
Yeah, they're like super sloppy looking.
Yeah, Superman had brown hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those, I used to play with those guys like crazy. They were everything to me. Those were action figures to me.
Which ones?
It was Batman. He was a little PVC plastic, probably about 3 inches tall.
Yeah.
And he had his hands on his waist, and Robin had his arms folded, and Superman was breaking a chain.
Or he was. There's another one of Clark Kent ripping open the Superman costume too.
Yeah. Yeah, and Superman had brown hair. And he almost had brown hair, like, it almost looks like he was painted to look like George Reeve.
Yeah, they're basically cake toppers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they still use the molds, like, when the Batman movie came out, Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
They reused the molds to recast, but the PVCs were even smaller. They were about 2 inches now. They were real small. But those are the first ones that... before Meagle came, that was Batman Robin figures, and I remember my Batman had he got scraped on the cement, so his chest was all scratched.
Yeah.
But those were my guys, and then when it was like opposite, when Meagle came out, they seemed so big, and then we had Batman and Robin, and we would lose them, the shoes would break, and we would lose gloves and stuff. But I remember back then we would get new guys all the time. Like if I had Spider-Man, he would break up, the wire would break up, and he'd be floppy.
Oh yeah.
So we'd keep getting new guys, but I remember when I got a new Batman, he no longer had that removable mask.
Right.
And I was disappointed. Why do he have his eyeballs and he's smiling now? He looks different.
Yeah, I think that was because kids were like, they were complaining about losing that mask.
Yeah.
They were stealing it, and you know, like it was easier to make it. I love, what do they call, molded cowl Batman.
Yeah, I like him now. He's one of the best.
But see, I remember, like, again, like Brian, you had a great just turn of phrase there where you said something about childhood, like it's hard to remember in the mist of childhood or whatever. Yeah. But I do have this vivid memory of like the day before and then the day after. And there was one day when I would go to like swimming class. Like my mom was friends with the woman that they'd been friends with. She ran this swim class for kids or something. I couldn't have been more than like four or something. And I remember this kid had this Superman figure that I'd never seen before. And this kid took the Superman out of the cloth outfit and took him in the pool. And then while he was doing that, I was fascinated by the outfit. And I was like using my hand to kind of fly the outfit around.
Yeah.
And then my mom kind of came over and said, put that, you know, that's not yours, just put it down. But the second part of my brain went, I can't believe this kid's, you know, taking his figure in the pool. Like, what's wrong with this kid? but then I kind of bugged her about it. Like, what was that? You know, where did he get it sort of thing? And then I keep going back to the Woolworths in the Maplewood Mall in St. Paul that had a lot of Mego stuff. And Borgstrom Pharmacy in St. Paul, too, had a lot of Megos. And somewhere around there, I think I found them, but then I'm pretty sure my first guy was probably Spider-Man because I was obsessed with Spider-Man as a 4-year-old.
Oh, like I think we all were.
Yeah, I asked my mother when I was like 4 or 5 if I could change my name to Peter, you know, when I got older. And I think that must have been the first one, followed shortly by I don't remember if I ever had Robin, but I know I had Batman and Superman. Some of the kind of – I never really got many of the – like when I got the Star Trek ones, like I was obsessed with that show. I had the Enterprise. I had the Phaser. I had the Communicators. But when I really think about the characters that I had, I think I had Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Scotty, and a Klingon. And that was all I ever had. Like I didn't go deeper into the aliens. I didn't get a Uhura or whatever. And that's kind of about all I ever had with that line. But you know, you said something that's when I noticed it. I could not get my brain around why McCoy's wrists were different than the other two. McCoy had those metal implants in the wrist.
Yeah.
Like he had clearly had wrist replacement surgery and he had these big metal balls, you know, in where the wrist joint was.
Yeah, they must have changed the body about 3 times in the first couple of years before they settled on what, you know, became what we in the inner circle of Migodom call the Type 2 body.
The Type 2 body.
And that body was before then, like, if they did a character like Tarzan, they gave him a full cloth bodysuit because it covered all the joints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Tarzan looks like he's wearing, you know, when Jason, when George on Seinfeld runs around naked, he wears that bodysuit.
Right.
Tarzan kind of looks like bodysuit man. But when they did Conan, just 2 years later, Conan, they just put a loincloth on the type 2 body because it looked... They didn't have clunky joints anymore.
Yeah, and he didn't. But he always looked skinny to me, Conan.
Yeah, well, that's
I never liked him so much as a kid. Yeah,
yeah. You know, like I don't know what you guys, like, where you grew up, where if you had a good selection, but I'm telling you, where I grew up, it was like Hulk Spider-Manville. Yeah. So like the back of the card used to anger me, you know, because it was like, oh, I don't see Green Goblin.
There's a lizard. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a few of them because my dad was friends with a guy who owned a toy store. And in fact, they used to go to Toy Fair together in the 70s.
Wow.
Wow.
And he used to have like this, almost like this area just full of Migos that I'd never seen before because it was all like the unsold things. So I'd be like, yeah. Friar Tuck, Wizard of Oz, Catwoman. And I, you know, I famously probably told this story before, but every time I saw one of the Super Gals, I swore I'd buy it, but the whole idea of buying a girl doll drove me crazy. Mm. And I couldn't do it. And I, you know, I secretly wanted Batgirl, Catwoman, like I wanted them all.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't bring myself. And I finally broke down. I said, I know how I can do it. I can order them out of the comics. And I circled like Invisible Girl, Human Torch, Thing, Batgirl, and I took my first communion money and I said to my mom, I want to do this. And my parents said, well, yeah, it's really hard to get a money order, which I found out they were kind of lying. And they said, my dad said, oh, I'll just take you to Parkdale, which was the Mego headquarters, and we just never followed up on it. So that's probably why I'm here right now discussing dolls with you.
Right, it's became an obsession.
Yeah,
you need those females. Because whenever I had a female Mego, I had Wonder Woman. I got her for Christmas one time.
No kidding, eh?
And then I remember my dad took us to Toys R Us to buy a figure, and I remember my brother bought Aquaman, and I grabbed Batgirl, and I kept feeling weird that I was buying Batgirl instead of like Superman or some or the Thing or something.
Yeah.
And I got it, I took it home, and every time I had a female figure of Mego, when my cousins come over to play, I'd always let one of my girl cousins take it home.
No kidding, like, eh?
And we played, and then she would say, you know, I said, oh, go ahead, take it. And now it's out of my, I played with it, and now it's gone. But ever since then, I've always been looking for those. I still don't have a Supergirl.
No kidding.
But I might have bought two Batgirls since then, like one complete and one not so complete. And I have a Wonder Woman I bought at What an Amigo Meets. So it's really weird how you have them. Like it was before Star Wars, so I was probably about six or seven years old when I had those. But yeah, it's weird how you have them and then they leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny though, back to what you just said, Brian. It's funny that you say that, because this, like, as happens a lot of times on the show when we talk about stuff, you know, a memory or a thought doesn't really click until you just all of a sudden say something and you go, oh, that's right. You know, when I go back and think about it, and I see these amazing pictures on the Plaid Stallions, you know, site, these store photos of, like, you know, rows upon rows of Mego characters, whatever. I don't remember walking into a store and just having my pick of like dozens of characters ever for any of these lines. Maybe that's why I didn't go further and deeper with. I know the Star Trek, the Alien stuff was a limited, but I mean, I think I remember seeing like the Charon, you know, like on the shelf or on a peg once or something. I remember the artwork on the card, but like the superhero stuff, like, I never had I don't know if I ever saw Batgirl or Wonder Woman or any of these characters. I saw some of the Marvel characters more. Yeah. Maybe I wasn't noticing as much, but I think I had the Thing. You know, stuff that I thought was just kind of cool look. Like, I had the Hulk, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was mostly Hulk and Spider-Man kind of everywhere. And I know they were hugely popular, but you know what? I do have a question though. When you think back about that, how deep, and it truly is kind of crazy when you look back at some of the choices Mego made and how they went deep on certain things, you know, with characters in DC and Marvel. But like, then there were certain ones that were popular at the time that that sort of didn't happen, like, you know, like Daredevil or you know, Ghost Rider, you know, or, you know, some of that stuff. Was there who was kind of making some of these decisions? Because it's kind of extraordinary, the stuff that did, like, there was never a Doctor Strange. It was a Doctor Strange rubber figure, you know, a dangler.
Yeah. And a Red Skull too.
And a Red Skull. Penny, yeah. But not in Mego form. Who was making all these sort of
decisions? Well, you know, I've tried to get, like, Scott and myself have tried to get the answers to that. And, you know, it's hard because I think what we're dealing with here is a lot of people who, they're adults and there wasn't geeks quite the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you that Tarzan, I asked why Tarzan was included because it seemed like an odd choice. And, it was the vice president of research and development, Neil Cublin, who was a great guy, told me, oh, I loved Tarzan. My dad used to call me Tarzan as a kid. So I went and got the rights. And so he was just a fan.
See, now that to me, though, that to me sort of, my brain would go, oh, well, that kind of makes sense because every Sunday or Saturday morning, you know, one of the local stations was running the old Tarzan films.
Yeah. And the other thing is, too, you say things like Daredevil. His series was middling. And he never had any television exposure.
Right.
So, you know, if you look at it, the first World's Greatest Superheroes, the reason they chose to do those characters was because there was a TV program at the time called World's Greatest Superheroes on, like, New York's Channel 5, is what I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
And it was reruns of the Filmation Aquaman, Superman, Batman and Robin cartoons.
That's right.
And then the
those little Marvel cartoons that would real static.
Yeah, animation. And they got the rights to Marvel slightly after, and they went and they went with Spider-Man and Captain America, the two stalwarts, and both of them had cartoons. And
so was there a notion, let's say, like late 70s, when you had the Captain America TV movies, you had the Hulk TV series live action, you had maybe the Doctor Strange, you know, TV movie or something. You had the Fantastic Four animated series, et cetera, et cetera. Was there an attempt to kind of cross-pollinate with what was coming up in the fall schedule or what they had heard that Marvel was kind of working on or things like that, not to represent the characters as they appeared in those productions, but just to kind of have something on the shelves for the kids to kind of reflect those shows?
Yes and no. There definitely was an attempt to catch the zeitgeist, right? Like, everything became Hulk by the late 70s.
Yeah.
They weren't going to give a dime to Universal or Lou Ferrigno because they had the rights to Hulk. But, so it was like, you know, comic Hulk, but, you know, it used to be that it was like the big four characters just became Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, and Hulk after that point. And Hulk was kind of like, you know, there was one doll in the World's Greatest Superheroes. I think they released him in 75. And then he kind of, Neil Cublin told me, Hulk really didn't sell until that TV show came on the air.
Mm.
And then it just sold by the millions. And the same thing with Wonder Woman. They actually took the 8-inch Wonder Woman out of the World's Greatest Superhero assortment and marketed a 12-inch fashion doll with other characters. And they put Linda Carter on the box, and apparently she flipped out and wanted $20,000 to keep it on. And, of course, there's a version with her on the box, and then there's a version without her on the box. So you get Mego's answer. The only other thing I can say that, because, you know, there's rumors that they were going to do a 12-inch Doctor Strange. Spider-Man sold well before he was on television because he was on television. I mean, he was on, you know, his cartoon was syndicated everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The only one I can really say that they made a concerted effort with, and it didn't work too well, was when the Plastic Man series was airing. They were supposed to get a bunch of different Plastic Man products out, but the only thing they got out was the Elastic Heroes stretch doll.
Yeah, and that's a hard one to find, too.
It is. And, because all of them are hard to find because Mego didn't use the same quality of latex or something. They exploded. And they exploded right away. And, in fact, I talked to somebody who was helping set up Toy Fair 79 once, and he said the stuff they brought to display had exploded.
Wow.
So they were like, wow, these are crappy. Yeah.
Wonder if anybody has a cast of the original Plastic Man head from Mego.
Oh, yeah. You can get them from... you mean like they were going to do an action figure as well?
Yeah, to make a custom of Plastic Man, but using the original head.
I don't know. I think I may know somebody who was sculpting it, but I can't quite remember. It's more of a rumor. Like, there was supposed to be a 12-inch Plastic Man at one time.
The same with Mr. Fantastic, they had him on the package.
Yeah, that's something that drives me crazy. I don't know if you know this, Jason, but the 12-inch Mego superheroes, they first came out in Canada. Same guy who over-ordered the Action Jacksons, Morris Kotzer, he created the 12-inch superheroes. He felt that there was a demand.
Okay.
And so he, you know, Mego was balking at doing it, and he said, I'll order the minimum. So he ordered Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, and Robin for the first assortment.
Okay.
And they're really cool and they're really unique. When Mego finally did get into the 12-inch game, they used different bodies. And in the case of Superman and Robin, they changed the head sculpt. The Robin was actually like 10 inches tall, so Batman and Robin were like a proportionate height.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
they're really rare. And I can remember driving my mother nuts looking for the Robin because it was my birthday. And I said, I want a 12-inch Robin. And because I was a Robin-obsessed kid. But on the back of the Marvel box was Captain America, which Parkdale never released, and Mr. Fantastic. And from what I can understand, and they kept internationally, these figures got picked up, and Mr. Fantastic shows up in boxes from France, and you know, and he's always on the header and in the back, but it never got done. And I talked to the son of the owner of Parkdale, and he said, "Yeah, I don't think we ever intended to do it," and that's so disheartening. And I can't believe to this day that I haven't made a custom 12-inch Mr. Fantastic.
Right, and I guess they had that space to fill up on the box.
So yeah, it was pretty much a placeholder. But, I mean, I must have spent hours at stores, like, as a kid, hoping they had Because I loved Fantastic Four.
For some reason, I got that happened to me once as a kid. I swear, again, I wouldn't have thought of this ever if you hadn't just brought this up. You know the Mattel Flash Gordon line that came out for the animated series in 70s?
Yeah, of course.
Somehow my brain convinced itself that on the back of one of the cards in the store, I saw artwork for Dale Arden, that figure was going to come out. And I spent the better part of the rest of my life going into stores looking for a character of, you know, Dale from the cartoon.
You probably dreamt it.
I had to have dreamt it. It was never on any artwork for any of the figures. But that goes back to, I mean, this really was an amazingly fertile time. If you're just talking about Marvel, where some incredible, crazy sort of, I mean, there was a John Carter. I mean, that might have been early 80s, but I think late 70s with John Carter, a Mars comic, there was a Tarzan comic, there was Conan. You had, you know, the usual craziness. You had things like Ghost Rider and so on. But then you had the monster comics, too.
Yeah.
Like the Tomb of Dracula and Werewolf by Night, those were big books in the 70s.
They were.
So how come Mego didn't – how come Mego decided to do, you know, monstery stuff but not Marvel versions of monsters?
I even know that part because, you know, the big get with the monster in terms of licensing was Universal.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, they were still selling model kits and Halloween costumes. So Mego went to Universal. Universal wanted too much money, is the famous story. And then rival company Azrak Hamway, they hired away a Mego executive of marketing, VP of marketing, a guy by the name of Neil Saul.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things Neil Saul did was, you know, he started getting Batman and Rob, you know, Batman and Spider-Man licenses, and you know, for toy cars and stuff like that. And he snatched away the Universal monsters. He paid the fee, so they, you know, AHI was making these 8-inch Mego-esque or Mego-like monsters on cards that even looked like the Mego Batman card.
Yeah, and their head sculpts were best.
Well, they're the Aurora model kits.
Oh yeah.
So they're sculpted right. by Bill Lemon. They're, you know, you can't get better.
And so that kind of took it off the table then.
Well, then Mego decided, well, we have to come up with Monsters 2 to save the shelf space, and they just did what Marvel did, and they just made their own versions of the monsters.
Mm-hmm. And they still have a certain charm, though.
I love them. I absolutely love them.
But couldn't they have just gone? Couldn't they have just, you know, stuck the Werewolf by Night thing on it?
Why pay licensing, though?
Oh, that wouldn't have been. They couldn't have done that through Marvel.
No, in fact, you know, we did this. Well, yeah, they could have, but then they would pay Marvel a license fee.
And
would their Frankenstein sell better than Mego's generic Frankenstein?
Oh, see, I always assumed that they kind of had an umbrella deal with Marvel where I didn't know it was by character.
No, I don't mean by a character, but you still pay, you pay a royalty. Right.
Yes. Yeah. It just depends. I mean, if it's an umbrella where you go play with all these characters.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. Yeah, you would, but it wouldn't be any less necessarily risky than, you know, an Invisible Girl figure or something.
No. You're right. But I mean, you just pocket all the money. And Mego also, instead of paying a license fee, they put anytime they didn't pay a license fee, you could tell. Because they still got the same price point as a superhero, but if you look at the Mego Knights or the Pirates, they come with little guns and they have little extras. The monsters had glow-in-the-dark eyes and hands. Actually, in fact, you and I put together a video on the Mego Mad Monsters.
We did. Yeah, I watched
you
that.
You narrated it.
Yeah,
oh, yes, of course I do. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking. Of course we did. Yes, of course we did. Remember it like it was yesterday. All coming back to me. Who is this again? Yeah. What are we talking about? So I got to tell you, I mean, we're talking about Migos and all the stuff that we love, you know, the 8-inch scale, the cloth outfits, and, you know, we haven't even talked about playsets and all that stuff. I do recall walking down the aisle at Target, my beloved Target, one day and seeing the pocket superheroes. The smaller version, you know, the bent knee.
The comic action heroes.
Comic action heroes, whatever. That was Mego, right?
Yeah, and they blew my mind.
It blew my mind. Yeah. And especially Captain America. Like, I had to get the Spider-Man, but the Captain America I lusted after for so long. And then I finally got, because it wasn't the ones with the bent knees, wasn't that was that the Superman that had the metallic on it, or was that
they had metallic detailing.
I mean, it really was, though, as a kid, if your brain sort of becomes conditioned to see the same faces over and over again, Spider-Man, you know, Batman, Superman, the Hulk, you know, whoever. When I did come, like when Remco made those energized heroes, you know, they made Spider-Man and Superman, Batman and Superman, and they were out forever, like year after year it was the same. And then all of a sudden one year there was a Captain America. And it was just like, what the hell? Like, what was doing that? And there was a Captain America. I grabbed it. Was there a Captain America Jiggler too?
No, I don't think there was.
Was there a Bendy or something?
Yeah, there was a Bendy. And, you know, I couldn't agree more, because if I was out with my mom and I saw, like, Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh my God, Falcon! You know, like that would be the only, because you hadn't seen him ever.
Yeah,
you know? I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
And did you guys ever do this? Like, you had a favorite character? Mine was Robin as a kid. So I would buy the Robin Bendy. I would buy the Robin comic action hero. I would buy the Robin 12-inch figure. Like anything Robin, you know. I would buy the same character in like 5 different formats. Which makes no sense, but, you know, you're 5, so.
Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of did it with Spider-Man and Captain America to a lesser extent, because there was just less Captain America. Like, I mean, it's funny. I just posted a picture on Facebook of a super cool, I can't believe I haven't bought a Pez dispenser in ages, but this little box set of Pez dispenser of Iron Man and Captain America. And the Iron Man, the eyes light up.
I've seen that.
On the head of the Pez, and the Captain America comes with a little clip-on shield that clips onto the front of the Pez that spins. You can spin.
Those are new guys?
Those are new. Those are brand new. But I mean, I can't remember the first time I ever saw a Captain America Pez or a Hulk Pez, but I jumped at them because all I'd ever seen for so long was Batman and Spider-Man. And so all of a sudden, like looking through the thing of Pez dispensers, and you went, whoa, was that Captain? Wait, go back. Was that Captain America? You know, or like Thor or something. Yeah. I don't know when those hit, but it was kind of mind blowing when they did. So
I think that was the Mego era, and they almost looked like Mego heads.
They did. The Batman one looked like it was the same sculpt.
Yeah, and the Batgirl one too.
Yeah,
they were great, but it just seemed like, and maybe it's not just our brains kind of remembering it this way, but maybe it was that they did make fewer of the Captain Americas or whatever, and they tested the waters because Spidey was the big one. But so when I found a different character, I grabbed everything I could of that character. You know, that was I'd say it for Captain America and Spider-Man. I mean, Batman, I kind of was always perennial. I was never a Superman guy, never a DC guy. Batman was the only guy sort of in that arena, but Marvel all the way. Like,
yeah, Marvel was cooler because when we were growing up, Batman was cool when he was on a TV show, but then when I started seeing him on Super Friends, he became kind of lame. Like, he's like, he's kind of funny. And so Superman to me was always my dad's superhero. Mm-hmm. You know, so we had Batman and Superman and our Migos, but Batman was the funny guy. But then all of a sudden, Spider-Man was the cool guy.
Yeah.
And the new guys who started coming out, like Green Arrow and the Falcon, I didn't know who they belonged to. Like, if they were Marvel or DC.
Okay.
I would just, they would be buddies. Green Arrow and Falcon would hang out, and they would hang out with Spider-Man. And a lot of the Migos then was my first exposure to the character.
Yeah.
So we know the superheroes like Super Friends, Aquaman, Batman. We know they're friends. But when I got the Thing and the Human Torch, Fantastic Four, I got them for Christmas, and I didn't know who they were. And I had no idea. And my dad told me, Mr. Fantastic, I don't know if he told me, but we used to call him Mr. Fan, just Mr. Fan. Okay. And then my dad told me the Thing's name was Rockman and that the Human Torch was Bernard. Forever, I would call him Rockman and Bernard. They were buddies.
Now he'd be labeled a racist.
Bernard. So, and it was funny because when we play, my dad would pick up the Human Torch and go, ow, 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 ow. And not want him. So I thought those were who they were until I think the Herbie Robot
cartoon
came out. Yeah, when that came out, I finally found out who they were. And then, of course, comics. But we would get the comics that were at the deli, at the Polish deli, that had the covers ripped off.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how I discovered a lot of the characters that were not on TV, but I had Migos. So it was weird seeing them.
You just said something, and just, you know, bear with me. So it's Mego, it's the mid-70s. You're trying to pick from a pool of characters. I don't know exactly how this is being decided. You know, if Marvel has any input or if Mego's just doing it, whatever. Here's Captain America, this perennial. He's kind of been big since the 60s again, and now it's the 70s. And now you got this book, Captain America and the Falcon. Well, I mean, the Falcon was not a household name exactly, but it was a popular book. And you'd think about Mego and go, oh, yeah, well, that's great because it's a companion character for Captain America. It's a monthly, you know, comic that's out, there they are, yada, yada. But then you kind of go, like, did Doctor Strange not – wasn't that a really popular, trippy character in the 70s? Or was he more popular in the late 60s than he was by the mid-70s?
Well, or even Submariner, you know, Submariner, Silver Surfer.
I look at those guys and I think they weren't really hot at the time. I think I don't know because I've never gotten a definitive answer. But when you look at it, you know, the FF, they had an animated series that was syndicated, the Hanna-Barbera's Toons. The Submariner, he did too, but I don't think his book was doing too much at the time. I don't know.
I mean, it's interesting. It's like, and you've got that interesting little bit of, and we just mentioned it a minute ago, that little bit of history of at that time when Ben Cooper made the Jigglers, and the four that they made. Great, Brian, you back me up. Was Doctor Strange, the Red Skull, the Thing, and who was the fourth one?
I think it's Spider-Man.
Okay, so Spider-Man. So you had Spider-Man, and then those three options. So the other two, Red Skull and Doctor Strange, like, what the fuck? But then they went even further, and they made Halloween costumes for him too.
Yeah,
and you could be a Nazi for
trying to figure out the logic. In hindsight, trying to suss out the logic from back then, going, did they think that Doctor Strange TV movie might have been, you know, might have ended up being a series? Did they think Red Skull was going to show up in the TV movies, the Captain America TV movie? Like, it's really, and then nothing. And then nothing else. That's just kind of it. It's kind of all there is.
Yeah, it's a
kind of wild.
Like, the thing made sense because if you guys remember, and I don't want to make you remember, there was a terrible Thing cartoon.
Thing Ring, Do Your Thing.
Yeah, with Benji Grimm and the
Schmoo. That was the
best. Wasn't it the Thing and the Schmoo?
Thing meets Flintstones.
As a kid, I'd flip around and go, what a piece of shit this is. Yeah. I was like, I was 8, and I'd rather watch the McNeil Lair Report than...
I always wondered, like, what meeting was had, like, where that became an idea.
I don't know. Probably the same one where they did Gilligan's Planet. It was probably one of those meetings.
I watched an episode of Gilligan's Planet on the big screen last month.
Oh, no. See?
Yeah.
Always got a cop.
The Flintstones were cops at one point, remember?
Oh, yeah. And
the Schmoo right around looking for Scooby-Doo or something.
Yeah. I seem to remember the Flintstones lived next door to Frankenstein for a while.
Yeah. That was good stuff.
I think they lived in the same building as the Oddball Couple.
Fred had a real bad gambling addiction, and he needed to keep going.
He had to join the cops.
Yeah. He was a cop, yeah.
Well, he had to become a dirty cop. But wasn't there like a dog that hung out with Fonzie, too? Didn't he like...
Cool.
Live in the future? Yeah, I mean, just all these shitty... And none of it. None of these things that these idiots decided to do, like... We got to bring in there. We got to bring a little kid in there.
Are you trying to tell me that Laverne and Shirley joining the army and their commanding officer is a pig, voiced by Horshack, is not genius?
What's it? I'm saying you couldn't the mountains of cocaine that had to have been in these meetings to make these shows. But the thing is, every time someone said, "Oh, we got to put a little dog with them," we got to give Flash Gordon a pink dragon. Not one kid in the whole country went, "Oh, I got to watch it now because of the pink dragon."
Pink dragon.
We all hated it. We all hated the little stupid sidekick or the talking dog. It didn't make any of us tune in. It made us tune out. So they didn't know what they were talking about. They ruined stuff. And not because, like, kids wanted it, but just they just ruined it because they were stupid adults saying, "I know how a kid would think." But it's
the only one I liked was Baby Plaz.
Oh, God, I hated Baby Plaz. he ruined that show for me.
He kind of did. But however, that the whole show was so insane and the characters just so kind of crazy that I went, oh, this thing is living on another plane of existence that I
just kind of dug it. The first season was kind of whimsical, and then the second season was all about Baby Plaz.
Well, the first season, I was always wondering, Plaz, why don't you just kiss Penny? Man, is she pretty. Oh, my God. For a cartoon, she rivals Daphne over, on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I remember that, too. And, wasn't he kind of, like, shy of her?
Yeah.
Yeah, which never meant,
Yeah, Baby Plaz was like the Baby Herman of the 70s, from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like being kind of, but it's funny you said it. Baby Plaz. You had Baby Plaz. You had Godzuki.
Godzuki though.
Godzuki was terrible.
No,
was there a little Schmoo or Schmo or Schmai?
No, the Schmoo was his own sidekick.
He was his own sidekick. There was the pink dragon on Flash Gordon. There was the dog on Fonzie. I think Mork had his own series.
I think the second season of Fang Face added a junior.
Oh, the Fang
God Fang almighty. It was an epidemic in the 70s.
Yeah.
The king of all of this is Scrappy-Doo,
Yeah. Well, I did get an angry email once telling me to lay off Scrappy-Doo.
Did you?
it was kind of nasty, and I remember, if I was a bigger jerk about it, I was going to write back, "So you're the guy."
Yeah, it was probably Frank Welker.
Sitting on his pile of
pissed off, you're tearing apart his work. Put a lot of time into that character.
That's opus.
I'm not going to sit here 35 years later and have you tear him apart.
Yeah.
How dare
Uncle
you?
Scooby?
But anyway, the Pocket Heroes, which then became like
were done specifically to sell playsets. Like, they wanted to make, Hall of Justices. And
right.
And they're beautiful, and I love that line. And they, I'll tell you this, Jason. I spoke to a fellow who worked in the Mego R&D department, and he told me that they were actually experimenting with a Star Trek line for that.
Oh, come on.
And it never happened, sadly.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a crime. That's
and you know, that's one of the things I wanted to mention about Mego, why it was so great, is they were hiring people, like, right out of art school.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, they were hiring the young, bright minds who would work all night. And they had mm-hmm. a passion for it. And in a lot of the cases, these guys were fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I got some prototypes off a guy who used to bring them home for his high school sweetheart.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Because he was a sci-fi fan, and he'd take home, like, the black hole characters and Twiki and stuff like that.
Well, I find it, I stand by this, and, like, I, you know, the sort of retro figure kind of movement that's happened recently with the 8-inch figures, and there's always two schools of thought. One is to kind of make it, you know, replicate what came out back then, and then you go, so you look at some of the stuff that, you know, certain companies have done for 8-inch figures, and they go, oh, well, look, it looks like it fell in line with how that, you know, the primitive, not in a bad way, but how the primitive sculpt was back then. And then you look at some of the smaller figures, and you can do the same thing and go, well, they weren't that accurate back then. But, you know, I always argue that everything was not the Kenner Luke Skywalker head. And if you look at what Mattel did for Battlestar Galactica, and you just look at the sculpt of Dirk Benedict and Lorne Greene and what's his name, Baltar or whatever, and then look at what Mego did for Motion Picture and for Black Hole. And there was no laser sculpting going on.
Oh, no, that was all organic.
That was organic, and those are dead on. Some of those are
good.
Absolutely dead on.
Yeah, like they did the best they could for the time. And I spoke to a Mego sculptor, and he had his whole philosophy of how they should look. He said everyone should look like they're posing for a Russian portrait, so kind of expressionless, you know. Mm. And he goes, you got to capture that little thing, like in Kirk, it's a smirk. But he said, you know, you've got to also deal with, you know, the limitations of rotational molding. There couldn't be a lot of angles back then, and you know, there couldn't be hard shapes, so you had to soften features. And
yeah,
he was explaining that to me. And of course, then there, you know, there's paint apps and, you know, a lot of things that weren't at their grasp. But yes, I absolutely hate when someone looks and thinks retro means crappy.
Right. First version Star Wars, like you said.
Yeah, they all go Star Wars. They all go back to the first, which were the most rushed action figures in the history of time, by the way.
It's true. But I mean, to be fair, I mean, even up to Jedi, they never really got Harrison Ford's likeness right. And I mean that, I'm not saying that to denigrate. I'm saying in a way that whoever was doing those Mego sculpts or the Battlestar Galactica ones or the Dukes of Hazzard, any of those, were really dead on compared to the humans, for the most part, that Kenner was churning out with Star Wars. And then it's also like, yeah, but you can, you know, so for every one of those arguments, and you can point to those heads, you go, yeah, but look at the other things that Kenner did for non-humans in that line. There was no litmus test for this. And you go back and you look at the 3PO or the Death Star droid or whatever. These are amazing dead-on sculpts of non-human features. So it's not like across the board everything should look generic or blank because it was done, you know, it's trying to replicate something that was done 30, 40 years ago. And that's why when we did some of the stuff we did, like for Twilight Zone, for example, like I don't think it should be quite as soft as things were in the mid-70s for those characters. I also don't think we should see every line in Burgess Meredith's forehead just because we can do it today.
Yeah.
So we always tried to find the middle ground, like with the Flash Gordon, you know, 3¾-inch figures. You know, you know that's Timothy Dalton. You know that that's Sam Jones. It's not generic, but we also didn't want to take it too far to make it a dead-on portrait. But if we did, I think we would have been in within our bounds of doing it because of what Mego did and with those head sculpts.
A lot of people really want, like, that's the thing I think that Yeah, and the Amiga Museum is one of the arguments that will never be settled, because some people think Batman and they think 1974, and other people go, well, I want like a Hot Toys Batman.
Right.
But I want an 8-inch scale and I want to pay $25 for it. And it's like, eh, okay. and I don't, like, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and but, you know, nobody has the right definition of Mego. Some people think oven mitts, and other people think, no, I like painted hands, and other people like the molded gloves, because Mego was always evolving and changing. So, you know, and I, to go to that point further, NECA is doing their own 8-inch figures, and they're really doing it their way. And, you know, I like them. I don't buy all of them, but for, like, characters like for Ash from Evil Dead, well,
I've got the Ash. That's a hefty figure.
Yeah, well, it's highly detailed, too, and it's like, yeah, that works.
And I like them, too, because they're not really following Meagle format.
Yeah.
They're making an 8-inch figure, an 8-inch action figure, but with clothes on it.
Yeah.
They're making a modern figure, yeah.
Like, the Snake Plissken, the accessories with that Snake Plissken are insane. Like, it's a really cool, it's a great sculpt, it's a great figure, but all the accessories, you never would have gotten that with a toy from way back then. And Mego, to go further with the Mego stuff, the 12-inch head sculpts, the Buck Rogers and the Black Hole, some of those head sculpts are fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, very accurate.
The Buck Rogers 12-inch are some of the nicest things Mego ever produced.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look cool. I got a magnetic Batman hanging from my basement rafter here.
And we now know that was sculpted by Gene Salamacha.
Really?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's one of my favorite Batman, because it looks almost like, I don't know if he looked like that back then, but it almost looks like a Christian Bale Batman.
The mask does.
The mask is like his mouth opening is round his chin.
Did they do a magnetic one for Spider-Man?
No, they didn't.
I remember I remember as a kid seeing the magnetic Batman around. And even as a kid at that point, I knew the logo of the company because of the commercials. And I thought, any day I'm going to see a commercial or I'm going to walk down a toy aisle and there's going to be a magnetic Spider-Man, which is really the one that everybody thought,
here's what happened. They proposed it. It was in the catalog. I even know a fellow by the name of Rob, whose dad worked for Mego. He said he actually owned it.
Bullshit.
No, I believe him, because his dad was high up at Mego. And but then they decided to create web-spinning Spider-Man. You know, came up. I don't know if a toy inventor brought them this invention or they just kind of came up with it on their own, but the gimmick was Spidey shot webs from his arms. And I guess they decided, well, what's cooler? And this is, I think, much cooler. They put him in an awesome box that has cutouts of Craven the Hunter.
And the right forearm is hollow.
Yeah.
It's a hollow piece. It's hollow plastic.
I'm going to call this episode Memory Lane with Jason.
Oh, my God. Well, I had it because I had it as a kid, and then I got it years later as an adult, and then I sold it for drugs.
Oh, okay.
You had cutouts of Kraven the Hunter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy
Electro
cutouts.
Electro was on there, yeah.
Was it Electro? I thought it was Mysterio.
I would have rather had the magnetic one, because there has yet to be a Spider-Man figure. They have tried everything other than getting someone to make actual web fluid from the comic. Yeah. There's nothing that's ever been made in any format that ever really conveys him. There have been stiff arms that you put a missile in and it shoots out. There have been sound effects, whatever. Somebody should make something where a gust of air shoots out of the wrist and knocks stuff over. Like, powerful enough gust of air. Because any web thing is going to look stupid if you stick it in. It's going to be all messy. You know the ones that – they even made the one years ago where you put the spray can in the arm of the figure and it shoots out silly string.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's still a 10-hour cleanup afterwards. Let it go. Just make it a sound effect and a light and some air.
You can do it like the old Nicholas Hammond show in this really slow rope.
Yeah. Watch out, it's going to get us. Yeah. And then they wait for the net to fall on them.
Oh, yeah, that gently sail down.
That was state of the art. Yeah, I remember when that show came on, and that really kicked the Spider-Man thing into high gear for me, and having to get like the car and the smaller Mego figures and the 8-inch. But then one day there was a commercial on the syndicated channel for the what I now know was the 60s animated series of Spider-Man.
Yeah, you didn't grow up with that, eh?
I only grew up with it in reruns.
Oh,
it,
yeah.
As a kid. But I mean, Saturday mornings, you know, this was before the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Oh, yeah.
In 81, there really wasn't anything, you know, there wasn't a Spider-Man cartoon on at that point, which is weird. There was the Fantastic Four one and some other characters, the Thing one, but I don't think Spidey had his own 70s series until like 81.
Well, weirdly enough, actually, I think there is a Spider-Man series that was syndicated that if you look at it, you go, this looks just like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And what is this? Marvel Studios produced it and pitched it to the networks, and the networks wanted more superheroes and a little dog going to our... So they retooled it and created Spider-Man as Amazing Friends, but there is a kind of semi-forgotten...
Yes, but I think
Spider-Man
that
series that was syndicated.
I watched some of those. Those were terrible. At one point.
I think that was 1980, though.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, those were... Some of the same stories were redone.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amazing Friends was 81.
And Spidey did. You know, Spidey did show up in that awful Spider Woman series as well.
Do you know the story about that though? Which is really weird. Do you know that first of all, the Fantastic, unless I'm completely wrong, the Fantastic Four and Herbie animated series and the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, unless I'm completely wrong, as of a couple years ago, neither of those series were available on DVD in the U.S. They were Region 2 only. However, they are missing – well, the Spider-Man one anyway is missing Stan Lee's narration.
Oh.
Do you remember how each one of those had –
Hey, True Believers.
Hey, True Believers. This is Stan Lee. Blah, blah.
His narration didn't start till – it wasn't on the first season, I don't think. It started think once the Hulk started. Remember they paired him up with the Hulk?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That's when Stan started narrating both.
I think it's missing off of those DVDs for some weird reason.
Yeah.
But they're also only Region 2. So when I suddenly saw the commercial for this, what I now know was the 60s Spider-Man series, and I thought, oh, my God. They showed it every afternoon, and I was just glued. I thought somebody was finally making a cartoon for Spider-Man. I couldn't believe it was being done.
I love the 60s Spider-Man show. That never ended airing here because it fell into a weird rule called Canadian content.
Mm-hmm.
Because Spider-Man was Paul Soles, a CBC announcer.
In fact,
I got his autograph. My buddy Sam Noir got me his autograph at a show. He's got to be like 80. He was also Hermie the Elf.
And the fact that Spidey is always making back bacon and drinking Molson's in the show.
Yeah.
That was okay to run. Yeah. That runs in Canada forever, right?
You know what? The funniest thing is the guy who did the voice of J. Jonah Jameson, Paul Kligman.
Mm-hmm.
He was on a
Miss Brand.
Yeah, he was Parker. he was on a Wayne and Schuster, which was a Canadian comedy troupe. They were known for being on Ed Sullivan a lot. He looked exactly like J. Jonah Jameson. He also did the voice of the Red Skull.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And
Captain America.
Growing up, my mom used to listen to a light rock radio station, and they had this guy on named Carl Banas who would read his poetry, and he had this deep voice. And he's the voice of the Scorpion on Spider-Man.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
oh,
and whenever I watch the Scorpion ones, I just get taken back to like being in the kitchen listening to that guy talk.
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't Iron Man in the 60s ones, isn't Iron Man Dean Wormer from Animal House?
Yep. Yes.
Is he that's really?
And
that's brilliant.
Thor, the guy who played Thor was like bald and nebbishy. Like I can't watch those Thor cartoons because I can picture the guy. You know, he's just this old. It's kind of like the guy who voiced Batman in the Super Friends, Olan Sewell. Have you ever actually seen him?
I've never seen him.
Oh, he's in a lot of like Andy Griffiths and Captain Midnights, and he's like an old guy in the 50s.
Wait, but I'm sorry, but the best one is is the guy who was the voice of Tarzan and Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
Bob Ridgely.
Yeah.
Who was a perfectly handsome fellow, but Bob Ridgely is the last guy you would think is the guy to go out and fight crime.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he just looks like someone's dad in the 70s.
Plus he played the colonel in Boogie Nights.
He played the colonel in Boogie Nights. Oh,
thanks is that the a lot, guy Sundar.
Is that the guy who says, "Well, thank you very much." Yeah. When he looked at Diggler, is that the guy?
Yes, that's him. That's the colonel. Yeah, he was also in. He was in Philadelphia too. He was in a lot of like Jonathan Demme movies and God, he was in Blazing Saddles. He was the hangman in Blazing Saddles. But it was like you're going, that's the guy that was Tarzan and Flash Gordon with Bob. That's the guy. He was good friends with that's where the Paul Thomas Anderson thing comes from. He grew up working and acting and stuff at a time with Ernie Anderson,
right,
who was the voice of ABC.
Marty.
They were friends, and Ernie Anderson is Paul Thomas Anderson's father.
Yeah.
And that's how they became friends. He's known him since he was a kid. Well, he's gone now, but
yeah.
Anderson knew Ridgely when he was a kid. But yeah, that's like Alan Oppenheimer too. He's not exactly, you don't look at him and go, "Whoa, there's a big muscular skeleton guy." Take over the world.
Well, isn't He-Man Morris the Cat?
He looks like an accountant. He-Man what?
Yeah, well, He-Man was also Morris the Cat.
Was he?
Yeah, I couldn't.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, don't want any more of that. Yeah. That Morris the Cat?
Yeah, I could never watch He-Man because it was like, why is Morris the Cat He-Man?
God, the Morris the Cat was such a bitch. Like, every commercial was just. Mm-hmm. He did more damage to Cat's image than anything.
He's the original.
Kind of like, oh, here we go again. Another boring meal.
Yeah, I wonder where they were going original, with that.
It's like the original Garfield, that guy.
Yeah, with Lorenzo Music.
Lorenzo Music was Garfield, yeah. It was Carlton, your doorman.
Boy, we have really gotten off the Migos.
Hey, Art.
Yeah, man.
Welcome to Podstallions. Yes.
That's awesome.
You know what we should?
I feel like I'm on an interactive podcast because half the time I'm listening and then half the time I'm like, wait, I could speak.
Yeah.
So you might hear me saying, yeah, a lot and agreeing.
At least don't nod because no, we can't tell.
Yeah, you can't hear the nod.
That's funny. I've waved before and I'm always embarrassed.
Funny.
We should We should talk a little bit about our annual convention.
Yeah.
Yes, we should. I know you've been waiting to print up the programs, but yeah. I was kind of thinking this year I'd be able to make it out for it.
And you're going to come?
I am not going to make it out. Ah. I am not going to make it. The universe has conspired against me once more, and too much stuff going on, and this back issue that I've had for a few months. So I'm going to have to miss it, and I'm sorry, but I want a full report at every moment.
I will be. You can follow my Twitter for the Migo Meet, which would be at Migo Museum, and of course Facebook.com Migo. I think it's MigoMuseum.com.
And I retweet everything you post, pretty much.
You do. You're,
so
you're,
it's like by following two of us.
That's right. And
you're going to go, right? You're going to be there, right?
Well, yeah it's in his backyard. I'd be mad if he didn't show up.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's so weird because last 2 years ago or whatever, when we found out that I overheard that we were kind of outgrowing our stay the last place.
Well, wasn't it? Yeah, what it was, we had – it actually was – we got the wonderful people at the Toy and Train Museum in Wheeling, West Virginia. They hosted us for 10 years.
And, oh, wow.
They were fabulous to us, and we were really comfy and homey, and there was something very familiar about it. And I loved the ritual, but the fact is that, you know, we were in the basement of a toy museum in Wheeling, West Virginia. There's no airports, and people were starting to say, you know, there's nothing to do for my family here. And we started saying, well, we should probably move it just somewhere else and see if we can't bring in new people. And some of the old ones will follow us. And you know, it's always a drive for me and Steve, who co-runs it with me. Well, Steve does all the work and I take all the credit. And we just decided to turn around. And Art, I must have overheard us and said, hey, let's do it in Skokie. And we were like, done.
Yeah, like, and I said, what if you moved it to Skokie and have it comics guys could help promote and everything? And they're like, yeah. And by the time I went back to walking back to my table, people were saying, so, Migo Meat's going to be in Skokie next year? I'm like, wow, it got around fast.
And we did it. And it was a big leap of faith. You know, we had to throw a little money at it, which we never had to do before. But the first year, which would, you know, the first year is going to be the shakiest in a new venue. And we had our ups and downs. We did not lose our shirts. We didn't. I think we could have bought a Coke with the profits, but we were okay with that. None of us were in it to make money. We just don't want to lose money. And you know, it was a great turnout, and we met some new people. People came from Puerto Rico to do Migo Meat last year. And so we're hoping. We know we'll get the Migo Museum regulars, but it is an open toy show. But we're hoping to see a little bit more walk-in traffic this year.
Doing beautiful downtown Skokie on Skokie Boulevard.
And Steve put that together. Steve Moore is the real brains behind Migo.
What's the hotel?
The Doubletree Conference Center in
Skokie. Okay, so I just want to make an announcement for the Doubletree Conference Center management. A lot of the groupies that will show up, the Migo Meat groupies, they are not prostitutes. They are groupies, and it's just part of the whole Migo Meat experience. Right. They are just there because they're fans of Migo, and of course,
you want to hear a funny story? Is last year we have a thing called the Migo Suite, and that's the people that pay for the weekend. They get a room to hang out in on Friday nights, and you know it's. So we're all in there painting dolls and putting stuff together and talking. And across the hall, I don't know what convention it is, but these ladies were just screaming and laughing and whooping it up.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I remember turning to Steve and I go, I'm going to join them. And it was killer because I don't know, they were probably like a teacher's conference or.
Well, the man to woman ratio was good.
Well, yeah.
Just bring three guys with you and you're better off than bringing like five.
Yeah.
All right, you two guys, come on.
We were just so sedate, and it's kind of funny because it used to be an all night party, but we're getting older.
Yeah, and the people are bringing children now. So it's when I first went was about. I think I missed the first two or three. I might have been to maybe six of them. And the first time I went, it was no kids, maybe one kid. And now there's more and more. But as you said, we're all getting older. And most Migo guys, I would say the bulk of the – and bulk is a bad word, I guess. But the majority of the collectors are probably in their mid-40s.
Yeah. There's a few in their late 30s.
Right.
But, you know, the one thing about Migo Meat is that when I go there, I often don't even buy Migos. I end up buying, like, Shogun Warriors or
– right.
Because there's a lot of really great stuff there.
Okay. Well, that's where the – now finally this where this comes in, since I can't make it to the show. I'm putting the alert out to both of you. I would like, please, a nice, fresh, crisp Captain America figure. Now, I'm talking about not the bent knees figures – but the ones that came after that, the pocket with the pocket heroes,
the ones with the straight legs,
the straight legs with the metallic. There was a metallic one, Captain America and a Spider-Man, right? I'd love to get one of each of those loose if you guys can find them for me. I will happily pay, but I'm sure you'll be able to come up with something there at Migo Meat, right?
Our eyes will be open.
My eyes will be open.
Shouldn't be too hard.
I'm not getting a table this year. I have decided to help Steve, and I will be your greeter at Migo Meat.
Oh, cool.
Year. Yeah.
Oh, wait, and also, did the pocket ones – just one second. Did the pocket ones come with – like Captain America came with a shield, right?
Always, yeah.
And he had straight arms too, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of them didn't come with accessories, right?
The comic actions, a lot of them did. They came – the pockets kind of were skimpy on the accessories, but the comic actions, the Wonder Woman had her lasso. Batman and Robin had the bat ropes.
Mm-hmm. The bat ropes. That was it.
They were just like coiled.
Joker had a cane.
Like a little hole in their hand, in their fist.
Yeah, which, you know, we should just address. The comic action heroes look as if they're in a state of self-pleasuring. They have, you know, that
well,
fist
there is that. Yeah.
That Tarzan fist. Yes.
and that they've thrown their back out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kind of at the same, and they were doing it and then threw their back out while they were doing it and can't walk. Right.
Yeah, they were all meant to sit in the Batmobile at some point.
That bugged me as a kid. But didn't some of them come with like little weird rock formation type bases that their feet
they
kind
all
of
came with them?
Yeah.
That was such a weird... Don't you think that's such a weird idea?
But you have to understand, like, there no? was one 3¾-inch toy line out at the time. And that was the Fisher-Price Adventure People.
Right.
They were... These Spocket Heroes were before Star Wars, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
76.
Yeah.
And so Mego didn't... Like, there wasn't anyone to rip off other than... And, you know, I wonder, the Adventure People came out in 75, but Mego probably was developing the comic action by that point. So, I don't know. But, you know, so it's not like, oh, these are crappy 3¾-inch figures. These are like the second or third 3¾-inch line ever produced.
Right. Oh, no, I love them. I understood as a kid that they were... I mean, initially, I didn't understand why they were in the position that they were. And then it started to kind of dawn on me, oh, well, it's easy to sit them down and stuff, which kind of made more sense than... Look, it was either you took a you know, 5-point of articulation figure with straight legs, have them sit them down in a you know, bamboo and look silly with the legs straight out, or you could, you know, sit them the way a person sits in a car, which is kind of what made more sense that Mego did. It's just that they looked a little more awkward when they stood upright. So, and, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. But I mean, the Pocket Heroes kind of doubled the amount of characters that were in the knees bent ones, right?
But they added Zod and Lex Luthor and Jor-El.
Another head scratcher. That was a huge head scratcher for me as a kid.
Well, they had huge heads.
Not being able to figure out why none of those characters looked like Superman the movie. It made
I can tell you this again, I would point right to the fact that they had the rights to Superman and they were not gonna pay the Salkinds any money to get the costumes, you know? Especially because Superman's costume in the movie looked exactly like the Mego doll. So they made a Superman that looks distinctly like Christopher Lee, but not enough, or Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. Although I would buy a Superman.
I'd buy a Christopher Lee dressed like Superman. I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
That's a nice custom.
Yeah. Make that. But then if you look at the rest of the characters, they're vaguely... You know, like Lex Luthor looks like the Lex Luthor of the Super Friends, which is much better. I wouldn't have wanted a Gene Hackman doll.
Nah.
Oh, I would have wanted. I would have wanted a Gene Hackman doll. I could have reenacted all the scenes as Popeye Doyle.
Of course.
French Connection.
You were.
Brando. I would have just ripped his clothes off and grabbed a Barbie and done Last Tango in Paris. So it's probably a good idea they didn't make that back in 78.
We would have had a lot of confused kids.
Yeah. Yeah,
but wasn't there
scared and confused children?
Didn't you recently, or maybe it was something in the archives that someone else unearthed and posted it someplace else? But isn't there proof in one of the catalogs that there was going to be a Superman the movie themed playset? They redid the Action Hero playset.
Yeah, they did a few different things. One of them was they took the comic Action Heroes Fortress of Solitude, which is actually the Hall of Justice, and they painted it white, and they put pictures of Jor-El, and they put a Pocket Hero Superman with it, and then they did the same thing with the Comic Action Heroes Exploding Bridge and Tower set. They merged those together, and it was supposed to be the Earthquake from the film.
That's right.
And it, you know, they just didn't get enough buyer interest. Superman was not a big merchandising blitz.
No.
And then were going to do a 12-inch playset as well, but all that really was a backdrop that you could switch photos from the movie.
But do you think, and I'm, honestly, do you think, because Superman was a huge movie. That was really big.
Yeah.
But do you think that if people had walked into stores back then or kids and they saw that Superman the movie logo and they knew that was Lois Lane, from that was Margot Kidder, and that was – do you think that it would have made a difference on merchandise?
No, I don't think so because like I don't know – Superman is Superman, right? Mm-hmm. And Mego had like 16 different Superman products out at the time.
Right.
And – what would an action figure? I don't know. I don't think so. I think everyone would have bought Superman and the Jimmy Olsons and the Otises.
You think the Ned Beatty's been left on the shelf? Come on.
I got to tell you that I have a theory about...
Nobody would have bought Valerie Perrine? Come on.
I would have
bought two. Well, you would have, Mr. Medallion Man. But,
oh, yeah. I would have bought one to hang around my neck with my gold chain.
Yeah.
One for every room.
Mr. Valerie Perrine.
Absolutely.
I think
Yeah.
Larry Hagman, you can take the Dallas Larry Hagman figure that never got made, make him the soldier, the captain that, you know.
That's
the,
right, bald face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some of the, we should just talk, we should just kind of crescendo with some of the things that Mego was going to make but didn't get out. I'm obsessed with this, Logan's Run.
Oh, that's right.
Doc Savage.
Arc 2.
I always heard a rumor, and you can confirm this. I mean, I'm sure we've discussed it before, but now we'll get it on the air. Flash Gordon. Wasn't there a time that, because they had Flash Gordon for 76 for those 10-inch figures, but was was the boat ever pushed out for the film?
I don't think so, because Mattel already had that animated series.
Right, okay.
There's a couple of things. Like, people always say Star Trek II, and Mego went under, and they said they would have produced figures. And I talked to two people at Mego who said, Star Trek the Motion Picture was a huge bomb. We never wanted to see Star Trek again.
Yeah.
One of the other ones is Greatest American Hero, of course, which there are prototypes floating around.
That's right.
They had a number of Dallas, as you mentioned.
Love Boat.
Dallas.
Love Boat got out there.
Yeah. <I
know. laughs> Well, we live in an unfair world. We couldn't get Greatest American Hero, but Love Boat.
Yeah, exactly. We never got Flash Gordon. I mean, I know we do now, but we never got them as kids. But I can. There was Love Boat. But you know, can I just? You just said something. What was the one you just said before Love? What did you say? Dallas.
Dallas. Yeah.
Flash Gordon.
BJ and the Bear?
BJ and the Bear they were going
to
do?
No, I talked to them about it and said, you had this C.B. McCall line. Were you thinking of taking those toys and making BJ and the Bear? And somebody in their R&D department told me, we thought about it, but it got shot down. So, you know, it was very early on. They also, you know, were kicking around Man from Atlantis.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, they were... they looked at everything and they were presented everything. And sometimes, you know, nobody taped this, but Neil Cublin there was a Mego convention in New York in 2004, and Neil Cublin was the guest of honor at the dinner, and he just couldn't be happier to talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we just threw names at him, like, why didn't you do this? And why didn't you do that? And he was just being very candid, what he could remember. And, somebody yelled out Gilligan's Island, and this is the one I remember. He goes, "Oh, we all hated that show."
I remember,
isn't it fascinating though the way history? I mean, at the time, you know, here is when you think about Star Trek the Motion Picture, and you know, Brian and I are both slightly fascinated with that, mm-hmm. the movie and the lead up to it and the merchandise. You know, Brian far more than me, but when you think about that, it's like. It couldn't lose. Like, as far as Mego was concerned, here was this show in syndication 3 times a day. The merchandise is doing great. It is the thing that no one thought ever could happen again, that this thing has a following after it's gone off the air, yada, yada. The Star Wars thing comes along and is massive. And oh my God, what happens next? They're going to make a Star Trek movie with new this and new that. And so you got this merchandise blitz in 79 for the motion picture, the likes of which Star Trek had never seen before or since, for one item, in one fell swoop, for one movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were let down by the film.
Oh, yeah, and they didn't know that until they went and saw it, the film.
They had no idea until they saw it, and they went, oh, shit.
No, they said, well, we just lost $40 million. That's what
exactly.
They said. Yeah.
Like, they must have sat there and gone... Are they kidding with this shit?
That was the quote.
Just spent a year developing all these fun, interactive, adventure things. What's going on? Nothing has happened in 90 minutes. I haven't even gone to the bathroom.
That was the first movie I watched from the lobby. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had to walk out. And we got our tickets free from McDonald's Happy Meals.
You were 9. You walked out of a movie?
I couldn't take it. We went and looked at the candy. You know, I was more interested in the Snickers bars.
You know what? We played Flipsies, you know, with trading cards in the lobby for at least 10 minutes during that film. That was my friend. I saw it with my dad, and there was a weird silence between me and my dad. after that film.
I remember being so excited by the newspaper ad and then the commercial, and then you saw the trailer's fantastic.
The Happy Meals, the toys.
The Happy Meals.
The toys had all the aliens. Remember the aliens?
Yeah, and the Marvel comic. And
my older brother Jack took me to the movie, and he was the brother in my house that was a Star Trek fan. Like a Star Trek episode could come on TV. This is in 78, 79. And he would know within the first minute which episode it was. Yeah. You know, this is them in syndication. So I had Star Wars. He had Star Trek. You know, he's 10 years older than me. So he took me to this movie. And I remember he took me and he brought his high school buddy. It must have been the year after they graduated, Christmas year they graduated. I forget. And he brought his buddy Paul, and I remember just being enraptured, like what the fuck, and kept waiting for the story to kick. I mean, I was nine, but I kept waiting for at some moment some kind of escapade is going to kick in, and it's all going to make sense, and this thing's going to start to move. And then I hear this snoring, and I look over to my left, and his buddy Paul was asleep. Now, he was 18 at the time, and he could have been high. Don't give me – who knows? It was 1979.
Yeah.
But his buddy fell asleep halfway through this movie in the theater. And wow. I sat there and just – and I remember coming out of it just being sort of, you know, just numb. Like I don't think that – I didn't go, wow, that was great. But I also was very confused as to what the hell that thing was supposed to be.
I almost didn't see the black hole because of that. Because I really wanted to see that, and my dad was like, nah, we're done.
Yeah, Star Trek movie. The Star Trek movie was the
first shit again.
The Star Trek movie was the first time I've ever saw Star Trek anything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I went there not knowing a thing about Star
so
Trek.
So you're a lifelong Star Trek fan.
And then it hurt so bad. It wasn't as bad as Superman 3, but it still hurt my feelings so bad that the next time I tried it was when the movie where Kirk met God. I think it was
thing.
So I went from there, and then I said, I'll try it again, and then I saw that one. I'm like, oh, man, why do people like
that? Wow, you just kept
awful.
That's like turning on every month. You turn it on and it's Spock's brain. And
yeah,
that's what you one episode.
Actually, I would think that was the greatest show ever. I mean,
but you know what's funny? What's funny is like I remember as a kid seeing this movie, and I know we shouldn't be talking about the movie so much, but it was a part. It was a big part of Mego at the time that they launched this brand new movie because of the history they had with the show, and it, by all you know indications, it was supposed to be this, you know, life-changing experience. But I remember at the time, and again, I can look at this from a creative standpoint too and step back and go, maybe this was kind of bold, like the decision the way, you know, The Empire Strikes Back went, or some of the storylines in The Force Awakens that you go, no, life isn't a big happy ending. So it is kind of bold when you think about it. But at the time, I was sitting there going, why does everyone seem to think Kirk is a douchebag? Why is it Spock doesn't want to be part of the ship? Why is Bones angry and got a giant, you know, ZZ Top beard? What is going on with all the characters that I loved so much from the show that has been on? Like, it seemed like a deliberate attempt to make everything kind of less likable and more adult or something, and then it just went off its rails because, you know, we all know how that went. But
it was a lot like 2001 Space Odyssey too, similar.
It's like it wanted to have some kind of Star Wars cachet, and yet at the same time it couldn't let go, or Roddenberry, whoever it was, couldn't let go of the pretensions that the show could, you know, tended to have, and then it kind of wanted to be 2001. Mm-hmm. And that was not going to – thank God the Happy Meals came out before the movie hit. They wouldn't have sold a burger if the Happy Meals came out after it launched.
I still have my Risk Communicator.
I love the Risk Communicator. Those were brilliant. The Risk Community. Wait, the Mego one, you mean?
No, the Happy Meal one.
The Happy Meal one, the one that you pull the strip through and it shows the comic strip?
No, it was just a piece of plastic and you had like Spock's face on it. And
okay,
it's like a vacuform piece of plastic that clips around your wrist.
They had those. They had those great little communicator things where you could pull a comic strip through it.
Yeah.
They had iron-on patches. That was the greatest Happy Meal of all time, probably.
Yeah.
The boxes were
the happiest meal.
Happiest meal. But there you go. There's the story of Mego wrapped up in Happy Meals.
Yeah. So, yeah, we should probably, speaking of wrapping up, we should probably wrap this one up. I thought we'd just touch a little bit about customizing Mego.
Yeah.
Because, Jason, you probably don't know this, but art's a fiend.
Man, I have over...
I don't know if I knew that. Maybe I did.
Yeah, I have over 300 custom Mego figures that I made. Probably more now, because that's the last time I counted. That was already probably 2 or 3 years ago.
Really?
But I have a whole bunch.
Art, you're in the back of the Mego magazine, right? The one that you...
Yeah.
Okay, I remember this. Yeah. Well,
Muhammad Ali on the cover.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, then I have a request for you then, too.
Yeah.
So I've mentioned this to Brian before, and I, of course, will pay for your time. Jim Rockford. I want a James Garner, Jim Rockford Mego.
That's cool.
Are you the guy that can do it?
I got to find a head. I don't sculpt heads, but I find them and paint them. And I like taking heads like I'll take a head that a different character and transform him to a new guy. Like I'll make like
a head out there that's kind of close to Garner.
Somebody probably has one. I know Gene Roddenberry. I mean, not Gene Roddenberry. Sterling, the Twilight Zone guy. What's
Rod
his name?
Sterling. Yeah,
Rod Sterling. Yeah, he kind of resembles him. I saw a head out there that made me look like him.
Didn't I make one of those?
I've got one from Hyler. Yeah.
That's right.
Because his widow Carol will not allow him to be represented in you know sculpted form and likeness form.
That's fine. Well, maybe Cooter from the from Hazard kind of looks like a Rockford. Well, maybe his hair's too long.
You can turn Cooter into James Garner. You're a you're a miracle worker.
I will be giving you some lead, and I'd like gold.
But I love those Titan toys. They're little 3-inch. Squishy looking guys. They're short with big heads.
Yeah.
I like those because I take the heads off and put them on Mego bodies. But the heads are really big. They're even bigger than the Figures Toy heads.
Yeah.
But once they go on there, they look cool as a set. So I made a lot of custom Breaking Bad figures.
Yeah. Wait, I know the Titans ones because I've got some from Alien, the ones that came out from Alien.
Yeah.
You've got that. You take that head and make it into an 8-inch figure?
Yeah. The head is real big.
It's big though, right?
It still looks cool. Like when you do the whole set. Like if I just did like a Walter White figure and put him next to Superman, he looks weird. But if I take Walter White and do Jesse and Hank and Gus and all these guys, they look cool as a set. And I've done that with you know the Mattel Ghostbusters 8-inch that Retro came out a few years ago? Well, I took those guys apart and used the Titans Ghostbuster heads and put them on them and gave them different boots, you know, tweaked them a bit, and they look kind of cool.
Yeah. Well,
I got a Bill Murray Ghostbuster now.
That's kind of... Yeah.
So I'm going to be bringing those to Mego Meet. You're going to see
them. Oh, that's awesome. Display. I wonder if one of the... There's a Doctor Who... a Doctor Who. I wonder if there's a Doctor Who Peter Capaldi. I wonder if that would work for Garner, or maybe even the David Tennant. The Tennant might kind of work for Garner if you did some. I don't know. There's got to be. I can't believe in all the thousands of Mego people out there, nobody has made Rockford, the seminal '70s detective that never got his own action figure.
I don't know if they ever made Maverick toys. Remember when Mel Gibson was in Maverick?
Yeah, well, yeah. Garner was Maverick on TV back in the
Didn't he star as a cameo in that one?
He was the third character in that. Yeah, but they didn't do any merchandise for it.
Oh, nothing. Okay,
nothing.
Did Exclusive Premiere do a Maverick doll?
They did a Wild Wild West. They did not do a Maverick.
Oh, that's too bad.
I would have been all over that if they would have.
We'll get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, we'll figure.
Yeah, someone got looks like I mean. Them. God, they've made Steve McQueen like 2 or 3 different times. They've never made Garner, not even from The Great Escape. They haven't done anything.
Because I got a whole box of like a drawer full of heads that I bought over the years. And I got a lot of different actors in there. And what I'm trying to do now is like I have like Taylor. That's Charlton Heston.
So yeah.
I'm into like taking the actors. And now I'm trying to make him into an Indiana Jones. Like, how would it look if the actor played a different character? Like, it was funny earlier you mentioned Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
I forgot who we were talking about.
Chris
but
Lee,
I have,
but yeah.
Yeah, but I have a bunch of heads. Like, I got Peter Cushing. I got a bunch of different actors. I'm trying to see what they would look like as, like, if I put them in a Captain America outfit holding a mask or something. Or, like,
That's just sick.
Yeah, and I have... I have a whole
this
bunch
is getting
of
into fetish territory here.
It's
the Shield
weird,
would have like a tea bag or something.
Like, and I also have been making like, say, I have a Hellboy head, or something, a character like him, and I'll put him in the X-Men, put an X-Men outfit on him and just see how he looks. So I'm trying customs. Different things like that. It's kind of like...
See how he likes to walk around in that.
My first custom, I put Robin's shorts on Mr. Spock, and I had Prince Namor the Submariner.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, you know what, my buddy Alex Ross, you know what he used to do, speaking of Migos, back in the day, because he loved Flash Gordon so much, he would take, for example, the 12-inch Christopher Reeve Superman Migo, and a little bit of black, duct electrical tape on the upper lip for a mustache, and then he made the Prince Baron's kind of outfit out of construction paper put it over the outfit, and he had Prince Baron from Flash Gordon.
That's really true.
And I forget what he used for the Flash Gordon, but he made these custom figures as a kid because he was so obsessed with the movie.
And we're all better for it.
He was just at our store a few weeks ago.
And Art presented him with a custom Alex Ross.
I did a custom.
You made a figure of him?
He made a Mego of Alex.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a trip.
I gave one to him and one to Mark Waid. Yeah. And the head, he's looking at it and he said, where'd you find his head? I said, I don't know. I found I think it's a Legion of Superhero guy, but with a bald head. He's smooth. I don't know if he was that way or someone sanded him down. But I painted him up, put some glasses on him. He looked kind of cool. Awesome. He liked it.
I just sent him the figure arts Freddie Mercury that just came out.
Oh, cool.
That Japanese figure, and he kind of loved that. Cause it's hard getting that guy anything he doesn't already have.
Right.
So making a custom figure of himself is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm thinking maybe even the David Naughton's brother, who's the guy that was on Planet of the Apes. Didn't they make a
James
figure
Naughton.
Of him?
Yeah.
James Naughton, that might be a good James Garner. You could do a little adjusting to the nose or something, but hey, keep me posted, Art. That's your project.
If James Garner, did he ever do an episode where he had a mustache? Because sometimes when you add a mustache, it changes the guy's head a little bit. I don't know.
No, he never did. You mean, did he ever wear a mustache in any of his roles?
Yeah, maybe.
I'm sure there's some, I think Victor Victoria, but I mean, I can't.
Maybe I'd kind of sideburns.
They must have made action figures for that.
Yeah, they must have made some Mego. That was right when Mego went and hit in the toilet when they did Victor Victoria, the Blake Edwards sign. But yeah, it's got to be. I can't believe no one's done it. I can just imagine the little checkered sport coat, the, brown slacks, loafers kind of thing.
Yeah, the open collar.
Open collar and then a revolver, a little black revolver that they kept in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
Someone's got to do it.
I get a kick out of watching those, like Starsky and Hutch, like the way they wore their shirts and stuff now. Like everyone, no one buttoned their shirt.
No way.
All hairy chest.
It was hot.
Yeah, it was kind of
nobody wore t-shirts. No one wore t-shirts in the 70s. I swear to God, Fruit of the Loom almost went out of business because nobody wore t-shirts or underwear or bras or anything. Everybody's all those shows. It's great watching the old Rockfords because now living in L.A., it's like the locations that they're driving around. You just go, oh, my God, that's gone. That's kind of still there. But everybody's just – nobody wears t-shirts in these shows. They're all – and even when the shirts are buttoned up, they're like that poly blend – and they're poking right through the t-shirt, the shirts, all the time because they don't wear t-shirts.
They let their body be the fashion.
Those were the days.
All right.
On that note, I just want to say thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next weekend at Mego Meet.
Yeah, and we're having the Mego Meet launch party at the store.
Comics in downtown Skokie.
Yeah.
And there'll be all kinds of links and information on the Pod Stallions Facebook page and the Plaid Stallions blog.
We're going to have some room for customizing.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
maybe some pizzas, everybody. Stuff like that.
Pizza don't in be Chicago. An I don't know.
Don't be an Okie. Get to Skokie.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thanks, everybody. And I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Art. Very much, Lois.
Thanks, everybody.
Oh, you're a good man, sirs.
Hang around, guys, because I want to tape a new recording or tape a new intro if that's cool.